This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. This is episode 19 of Novel Approaches here on the RightsCast Network. Welcome to the RightsCast Network's Novel Approaches podcast, a craft-focused conversation for writers everywhere.
Because writing novels is hard, and we're all in this together.
Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and Forward Madison FC Stan R.R. Campbell.
And I'm Sion Ashleman, freelance editor, book addict, and co-host of the Novel Approaches podcast.
In this installment of Novel Approaches, we'll be taking a look at how writers can best prepare themselves for National Novel Writing Month, also known as NaNoWriMo. But first, Sion, how's it feel to be on this side of the pond once again?
I had a really good trip with my mom. For those who don't know what we're talking about, I spent most of September in the UK, in Scotland, Wales, and this little part of England called Cornwall. And it was beautiful, and we had a great time together, and we had a lot of great walks. And also, I'm very happy to be home and with my dog, Milton, and eating a proper salad again, because it was ridiculously hard to find proper salads over there. When I say proper, I just mean what I'm used to, obviously. Yeah.
What was it about the salads over there that made them, relative to your cultural lens, not proper?
Well, if it didn't have, like, really sad, like, on the bad side lettuce on it, then there was no lettuce at all. And salad either meant random vegetables covered in oil and vinegar, which is fine for a lot of people, but unfortunately there are a lot of veggies I don't like. And so then, yeah, it's just like tempting fate. Or salad is like a thing covered in mayonnaise.
Oh, my. Yeah, actually, that resonates, because I don't know if you encountered this at all when you were in Spain, but I know when I was there, there was always the ensalada rusa that was, yeah. At first I was like kind of into it, and then I was like, wait, no, this is just mayonnaise. I can't hang with this anymore.
Yeah, they do a lot of things with mayonnaise over there in Spain, but ensalada rusa, yeah, it was a little iffy for me, especially since they like mixed potatoes and tuna, and for some reason that particular combination was just like very weird for me. And then they added peas, and then you lose me at peas. I don't know. Anyway.
I was never a fan of tuna, so I probably should have known better in the first place. But also, when I went to Spain, my Spanish was not up to speed, and so I was doing a lot of, sure, yes, I will eat whatever is available kind of thing. I'm glad I don't have a bunch of food allergies, you know? It was one of those moments where I was thankful for that.
Absolutely. Speaking of food allergies, one time we got like free bread, which was very exciting. They brought free bread with the meal, which is not like a normal thing that happens. But then they covered it in curry powder, which I am completely intolerant of. It just makes me puke all night. So I was like, no. Anyway, they do love their curry over there. So I am happy to be back and digging back into client work and projects and hanging out with my dog. And but like the big thing that I want to talk about is this month I'm participating in a mentor program for the first year that I'm participating, called YA for YA. And it's for querying YA authors who are looking to partner with a mentor during their editing and querying process. And there are 7 of us mentors signed up. You can learn more about it at yaforya.com, and that's the number 4, not F-O-R. And I encourage you to check it out. The submission window is open until October 15th, which is why I'm mentioning it. Yeah, we have a chat coming up, but I think this episode will come out later than that, so.
Yeah, and it is good that you mention it, because listeners, if you are listening to this episode the day that it comes out, which is October 11th, you've got 4 days to get your submission ready for YA for YA, so.
Right.
The clock is ticking, folks. The clock is ticking. Or the clock already talked. You know, maybe the clock has talked and you're listening to this farther in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, way in the future. A year in the future. 50 years in the future. Who knows?
If only we transcend. If only we can transcend that long.
So that's my biggest thing that is coming up this month. How about you? What are you up to?
The last month was full of a lot of submitting proposals for conferences and for teaching courses through the University of Wisconsin and a few other organizations in 2020 already, including some stuff that I won't actually, if assuming the proposal is accepted, that I wouldn't be teaching until June. So it's been a lot of looking deep into next year. But aside from that, in the near future, I did get to finally make the formal announcement about the third book in the Empathy series, which is Event Horizon, and that will be out in March of 2020.
How many months is that?
Oh, it's October now, so we've got most of October from the time that we're talking, give it 2-5 months, but it's slightly less because it's the early March is when it's going to be out, so, you know, just, it'll come together.
Yeah, right. You're totally done with it, right?
No, I'm not. So feedback from beta readers was, conflicting, and given the timelines that we had to work with to at least get it on the publication schedule at a time that would work for me, because if we were to try and publish this book late in mid to late 2020, my fear is that I wouldn't have the resources available to effectively market it. And so we're trying to get it done earlier in 2020. So what happened is, though I thought I had a manuscript that was in pretty good shape and ready to go, I relied on those beta readers and had a lot of reconciling to do with some very differing opinions. I was originally making use of some nonlinear storytelling, even within some of the points of view, which would have been kind of a first for the series because we're not talking about simple flashback. I mean, it essentially was, but I was pitching it as if it was happening in real time. It got a little wonky, and I ultimately decided to make the storytelling linear for those points of view to stretch out the tension. And so I'm in the process now of just going through and making sure all my timelines match up again and massaging in some new angles to old storylines so that they have a greater emotional resonance, not only in this book, but hopefully for the future installments as I'm starting to see them come together more vividly in my mind.
Sounds like some really good feedback, then.
It was really good feedback. It was tougher feedback than I had gotten on any of the previous installments in the series, but I think that's to be expected because I knew that I was... The plan for this book had to change a few times. It was originally going to have all of the perspective characters, but because that book got too long, I had to split it into two. That changed my fundamental approach to like what the true central question of this book was going to be now that I had to pull out the central question into book four. So there have, it required a lot of really deep level restructuring and presentation and re-emphasizing different parts of the story that originally were a little more in the background have to take the fore now and really be able to carry the weight of the full manuscript. And so that's pretty much what I'm doing right now.
Well, and also in our conversations over the months about it, it seems like you're always challenging yourself to try new things. Like you said, the nonlinear storytelling in this one, and you're always sort of pushing the envelope in new ways. And so it makes sense that, you know, the more you push it, you would get a little bit of pushback in some regards. And you're practicing, right? You're practicing how to defy conventions.
Right. And that's kind of, and I alluded to that exact thing, like you say, in previous episodes, I wondered if perhaps I was subverting reader expectations more, or a lot of the things that I talk about on this podcast, more than even I was comfortable with. And I think that really did turn out to be the case. And so now it's about kind of reining in the places where I might be stretching a reader's willingness to go along for that kind of journey and kind of trying to meet them more in the middle while still telling the same story. It's just about the delivery vehicles for it, essentially. But that's what I've got on the table. But we actually have one more matter to jump into here before we get to our NaNoWriMo conversation. And that, of course, is the winner of our drawing for a critique of their first 5 pages. Every month we will give out a 5-page critique to one of our patrons over at patreon.com/rightscast. And this month's winner is Maria. So Maria, congratulations, Maria. You have won for all intents and purposes, a critique of your first 5 pages from Sion. You'll be eligible to win again 6 months from now, and keep an eye out for an email from Sion in the coming days here. And if you, dear listener, want to be like Maria or our past winners, you can head to patreon.com/rightscast and support our programming at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month, and that will get you entered monthly in these drawings.
Hey, congrats, Maria, and I look forward to contacting you. And now, the big question, Ryan, are you participating in NaNoWriMo this year?
I think I will probably end up participating in NaNoWriMo this year. I owe the Event Horizon manuscript, the quote-unquote final, to my editor by, in her words, November-ish. My goal is to have it wrapped up by the end of October, though, and I'm very much on pace for that. And if that is the case, I will, yes, I'm going to try to do NaNoWriMo. I will probably not participate in the traditional version of it, but I'm going to be making November a big push month for a project that I've been working on and off for a few years now.
For those who aren't very familiar with NaNoWriMo or haven't participated in it before, do you want to just briefly explain like what it is and why some people do it?
Yeah, NaNoWriMo is National Novel Writing Month. It takes place every year during the month of November, and the goal is to bring writers together and to give them a unified chunk of time to make a big dent in writing a novel or to write a whole novel if they can. And the traditional goal for National Novel Writing Month is to write 50,000 words in the 30 days that we have in November, which is certainly a tall order. I think the average comes out to 1,667 words a day, if memory serves. So it is a good chunk of words to be cranking out on a consistent basis, but it is a really good mechanism to get you on the page. And there are a lot of reasons that people participate, including some folks from our hashtag RightsCast chat over on Twitter. We had some feedback from Cinna. Regular listeners to the show will recognize that name, but for those who are not familiar with Cinna, Cinna tweets at CINAEDHVIK. Cinna mentions that he normally uses NaNoWriMo to draft stories that he later will go on to edit. So he's just using it to get through those early drafts, and it's a really nice way to get that on the page. So that's one reason folks will participate in NaNoWriMo. And then we also had some feedback from M.A. Hinkle over on Twitter. M.A. mentions that one of the reasons she really likes NaNoWriMo is because she loves the sense of community. And that's another really great aspect of NaNoWriMo is that, yeah, we are writing 1,667 words a day, or at least we're trying to, and it can feel very isolating, but this is a big community event. So you'll see people on Twitter following the NaNoWriMo hashtag. On the actual NaNoWriMo site, you can create these, forget what they're called for the actual NaNo event. For Camp NaNoWriMo, they are cabins, but these groups of people that you can, you know, commiserate with and cheer on, and it just creates this really nice network of support. So that's another reason people tend to get involved. I personally use NaNoWriMo to just surge forward with a draft of whatever manuscript I feel like I have either been putting off working on or if I'm on a deadline. So last year I actually used NaNoWriMo to start the first draft of Event Horizon. So here we are a year later and I'm wrapping it up just before NaNoWriMo. And this year I will be adding a new POV to an old manuscript, to a romantic suspense manuscript, actually, that I think does need the love interest point of view stitched throughout. I might switch it also from first person to third person. And so that's going to be my big project, is trying to get that book ready to go for a late 2020 self-publishing launch.
So it sounds like a lot of people use NaNoWriMo to do like sort of first drafts or discovery drafts or what Anne Lamott calls shitty first drafts. But you're using it to do some revisions. How does that work? Do you still have the 50,000 word count goal?
Well, we will see. I do not anticipate that I will need 50,000 words of this other POV to really flesh out the book. But I will, of course, be doing that revision for the POV that is already there. I think for me, I'm going to be looking at NaNoWriMo this year as less about that hard word count, which I can see some folks might object to because it's not exactly what NaNoWriMo is for. But I think in my view, we can get the greatest utility out of an event like this by using it for what's going to make the most sense for us. You know, it would not make sense for me to force myself into writing 50,000 words for this new POV. And so that's not going to be my goal, but my goal will be to keep pace, quote unquote, for that POV over the course of November, and then stitch in the revisions of the original point of view as much as I can throughout the month.
Yeah. And I know this episode is mainly about prepping for Nano rather than the mechanics of the doing it itself, but I'm just curious real quick, how do people keep track of their word counts? Like, because I know when I use Scrivener, it has a really nice tool built in with a whole bunch of settings that you can make it so that it doesn't subtract deleted words and it just counts new words and things like that. I think you use Scrivener too, is that right?
I do use Scrivener, and I actually will at the end of, so I think you kind of have to take this approach to NaNoWriMo if you're going to really have that 50,000 word goal, is to, at the start of every day, don't revisit what you wrote already and start making changes and cutting here and there. I think, in my view, the best way to make sure you don't feel as though you're falling behind on this goal is to just kind of go forward with the story that you believe needs to be told here. And that's where, at the end of every writing session, I will go back and in Scrivener, depending on the version of Scrivener you have, it'll either tell you how many words you've written that day. Scrivener 3 actually has a feature that does that by default. Or you can, if you're using Scrivener 2, or if Scrivener, the original, is still supported, I would go back and highlight the chunk of text that I wrote for the day, and then it should, at the bottom of the screen, display those totally fresh new words, and that's the number that I'll use toward my daily word count.
Mm-hmm. And if you were using Word, I'm guessing you would just... people use spreadsheets, don't they? We're going to get into that later.
Yeah, there are people who will use spreadsheets, and I know in Word you can highlight a selection, and I believe, I don't know if it'll show you the word count at the bottom of the screen, but that's where I will use... the good old Google box and search for a word counter and just do some copy paste real quick.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
But as you mentioned, we're talking, of course, today, we want it to be mostly about how do we prepare for NaNoWriMo. We have this opportunity right now. This episode comes out October 11th, and I'm sure in future years we'll bump it a lot during the month of October. So there's some time, folks. How can we make use of it before NaNoWriMo? And we asked people in our WritesCast chat, what are some good case practices? What has been helpful or, you know, made you successful for NaNoWriMo in terms of preparation? And Sione, I don't know if you want to take it away with some of what Avery had to say here.
Yeah. So as you guys know, we run a chat and then we collect answers to these questions from the people who participate in the Twitter chat. So Avery Ames chimed in. She's tweeting at AveryAmes, and she says she finds the frenetic energy of NaNoWriMo lends itself to more creative storytelling in draft one. That's as opposed to rewriting a book or revising something like that. She adds, she's always up for cheerleading if anyone's on the fence and needs someone in their corner during November. So if you are going to participate in NaNo and you're interested in having some Twitter-based support, then I suggest you reach out to Avery. She does say no matter how much she's outlined, she always sets a writing schedule with uninterrupted blocks of time. Those are crucial. Is that something that you do too, Ryan? Do you set... like schedule time to work on writing?
Yeah, I was really glad that Avery mentioned all of those points, but this one especially resonated with me, and I think we'll see through some of the feedback from others as we advance through even different parts of this conversation that this is a big part of setting yourself up for success, is kind of looking forward into the month of November and saying, well, what days do I know I can be most productive? What times of day in general do I think I can be most productive? And for me, November is essentially, when I'm doing NaNoWriMo, it is essentially just an extension of my normal writing routine, which is up at 5:30, and by 5:40 I am typing until about 6:45. Then I am done. I will, on the days that I have my day job, I will go in during my lunch. I will write during my lunch, and then... Then I come home. And then on the days where I'm working from home, because I only have that day job part-time, I do the same thing. I get up at the time I get up. I get that writing done. I will take a break. And if it's NaNoWriMo, maybe I try to squeak in an additional afternoon session or an additional morning session to pad the stats, so to speak. But yeah, setting out that time when you're going to be hopefully uninterrupted, which is why I do it in the morning. I don't have to worry about something making me crabby during the day or about me just getting super tired or something like that, and then I get distracted and fall away from my ability to write.
Okay, I can't help doing a little bit of math because you said you're up at 5:30 and writing by 5:40. Does that mean you write without coffee?
Oh no, I have my coffee maker scheduled to make coffee so that the pot will be ready by the time I enter the office. So I will roll out of bed right away. I can't dawdle in bed. I will roll out of bed. I will stumble bleary-eyed into the office. I will splash some water on my face because I've got a bathroom in here. And then I grab that coffee. I sit down and the headphones are on by 5:38, 5:39, and I get to writing right after that.
Okay, that makes so much more sense. You've got an automatic timer. Yes. Coffee pot.
And I will add to, in full disclosure, that it is anywhere between 30 and 40 minutes into writing, I will get up and grab another cup of coffee. So I do take a break to walk about 10 feet to grab more coffee.
Avery added one more thing that I thought was really interesting. She builds in a word count buffer beforehand. So when she's planning like daily word count goals, it sounds like she plans to write more than she actually needs to, so she doesn't lag behind. Is this a strategy you've used as well?
Yeah, that kind of ties into the padding of the stats that I mentioned a couple minutes ago, in that if there are days where I know that I'm kind of feeling it more or that I have more time available, even if I can just throw down another 200 more words or even another 50 words, whatever the case might be, those are really good opportunities to, rather than say, hey, I made my 1,667 words, well, today I actually was able to knock that to 1,800 words. That doesn't seem like a huge difference, but in terms of averages over the course of the month, and if you're adding in that 100 plus words of additional writing every day, suddenly if you miss a day later in the month, or you can't quite get to the keys for as long as you would like, that padding that you set yourself up for early on really comes into play because you don't feel like you have to scramble to catch up later.
Hey, did you know the WritesCast Network is listener-supported? That's right, listeners just like you choose to support our programming financially through contributions of $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. In exchange for their support, WritesCast Network patrons can receive awesome rewards, including early, ad-free access to every episode of our programming, WritesCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, shoutouts in our shows, and more. Not only that, but the contributions of WritesCast Network patrons have us painfully close to unlocking a fourth podcast every month. Sound like something you're interested in? Help us bring you more content every month by visiting patreon.com/WritesCast and becoming a supporter today. That's patreon.com/WritesCast. Thanks for listening.
And we also had some feedback on this in terms of good case practices here from Cinna. Cinna had a few things to add. He mentioned that he'll do a lot of thinking and outlining, but that's about it, adding that he's more of a, quote, planter these days, so a planner and a pantser rolled into one. He also mentions it's probably good to keep in mind that the story is the reward, and so I really appreciated this feedback from Cinna because it's fair game to absolutely think in advance about what it is you are going to write. And that doesn't mean only in the month of October, but even during the month of November, day to day. You might finish a particular scene, and then a few hours later, if you find yourself thinking about your manuscript, I think there might be a tendency to focus on what we've written already because we're thinking about, well, what am I going to need to change? What do I need to correct? Maybe start doing some visualization, looking ahead to what you think you're going to be tackling the next day and getting that thinking done. And whether you write it down as an outline or not, just setting yourself up for that visualizing should be, I don't know, setting us up for success in my view anyway. And then that focus on the story being the reward. There's this big focus on making that magical number of 50,000 words in a month. And it can get tough if we're falling behind pace and we can get in our own head. But when we remind ourselves that the reason we're doing this isn't so that we can put up a cool banner on our Twitter profile that says we quote-unquote won NaNoWriMo, but rather that we wanted to tell this story, well, whatever the word count is by the end of the month, that's more words than we started with, and that is the reward unto itself. So I was really glad Cinna made those points.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, because I've never done NaNoWriMo, and it hadn't occurred to me that one could prepare. It hadn't occurred to me that it wasn't cheating to, like, outline, because, well, anyway, that has more to do with my own process, which I've talked about before. Like, I do discovery drafts, and that's what I develop my outline from. But if you are capable of outlining before you've written anything, which just blows my mind, I think that's a really good strategy. And especially, Ryan, I'm thinking about the way that you outline, and you pretty much know what each scene needs to do. And granted, like, it often changes later, right? I mean, we're just talking about a first draft. But if you have, like, I'm going to sit down and here's my prompt for this scene, vomiting out 2,000 words is so much easier if you have that prompt.
It really is, and I'm really glad that you pointed out that it, quote-unquote, might change later, because, yes, I do get down to a scene-by-scene outline, but I might open up the page on a given day and look at this writing prompt, which is another great way of looking at it. I might look at that and say, you know, I feel like I need to take this story a slightly different direction than what I originally laid out here, but I'm going to be accomplishing about the same thing on the deepest structural level, and so I might try to look at my scene-by-scene outline and say, okay, what are the storytelling mechanics that I still want to have in play here, but we're just putting a different face on it, so to speak. The details are going to change in terms of emphasis, and both for our characters, for me as a writer, and for the reader then as a result as well. So yeah, setting yourself up with what is the equivalent of a daily writing prompt is really effective, whether we want to think about that as a physical outline or just having an idea of what we're going to write. I think that's really beneficial.
And on the totally opposite side of that spectrum is at SkySongMA, who, when she participated in the chat, she said, "My nanos have been all almost completely pantsed, which was a bad strategy at first, until I learned to finish instead of getting to 50K and calling it good." I think what she's saying is that the 50K goal, because that's not the end of a novel, usually. Novels are longer than that. And so just switching her focus from getting to 50K from that to getting to the end of the story was really helpful for her. Is that how you understood that comment too?
That's also how I understood it. And I think that that's a really important point, because again, it's taking the goal of the month away from 50,000 words and retraining our focus on the story, which is what it should, in my view, really be all about. And, you know, she mentions here that her nanos have been almost all completely pantsed, which was for her a bad strategy. But I think other folks in the WritesCast chat talked about how even Avery suggested it earlier. Letting that first draft just kind of flow is a great way to get the creative aspect of the story on the page. So whether you pants or whether you outline, just focusing on the story, I think, is the really big takeaway here.
Yeah, I mean, like, knowing my process, I would definitely be counting toward my daily word counts, like, free writing about where the story needs to go next, and a lot of, like, probably repetition, just because that's how my discovery drafts come out. But hey, man, it's 50,000 words, right? And it's about the story, so.
Yeah, if you're advancing that story and you're up in that word count, I'd say you're in the spirit of the event. So that counts for something anyway. We also had additional feedback here from Kim. Kim tweets at LECHEGGOMYEGGO, Lechego, my ego, I believe, is how we would say that if it were a word. But Kim mentions this. She's very motivated by the data. She lives in spreadsheets all day, so she has a tendency to use the progress tracker and get competitive with it to see where she's at alongside everyone else. And this kind of ties into that idea of people who have spreadsheets and they really like following along and letting the data kind of speak to them. And I am probably not too, since it sounds like Kim is in spreadsheets all day, she might have an affinity for spreadsheets that is greater than my own, but I still really like finishing the end of the day. I keep my own spreadsheet outside of the Camp Nano or outside of the NaNoWriMo website, and then I can have some fun kind of playing with, all right, well, what am I on pace for if I continue writing at the same average that I have today? How many days might I be able to take off as Thanksgiving, you know, looms? Or is there a Saturday that I'm going to miss and can I shoot for 500 words that day? And it creates a nice competition day to day amongst yourself, then also keeping tabs on how other folks are doing. And it's not like we're out to quote unquote beat them or anything, but we might use someone else's elevated word count as a motivator. Like, all right, yeah, I think I can meet that. And we have this data driven ability to then take to the page with a renewed sense of purpose.
So those are some ideas for sort of preparation and some mindsets to get into moving into it. But what are some less than ideal practices for NaNo prep? We asked this question in our chat and also about the obstacles that people have encountered. And I'm going to talk about Kim again. How did you say it? I think it's the way you said it. I can't help reading it as leche, which is milk in Spanish.
I know. I think, and maybe it's supposed to be in there like that, but it's like lechego my ego, you know, like let go my ego, but not quite. Yeah.
Lechego my ego. Thank you. Yeah, so she has participated in NaNo a couple times and won once. She was underprepared, she said, and had little idea where she wanted to go with the stories she worked on. So this is about the planning versus pantsing again. And pantsing left her more anxious at the end and burnt out. She finds that her biggest obstacle is always time, followed closely by lack of energy, because she has such a busy and full life. Oh man, I can relate to that so hard. She makes up for it by dedicating weekends and part of her lunch, like you do, Ryan, to plotting and writing.
Yeah, and this is kind of echoing some of what was mentioned earlier in the conversation by others. In Kim's case, pantsing, or just kind of going to the page, maybe you just have an idea for a story, but you haven't put much thought into who the character really is, what they fear, what motivates them, etc. You don't really know where the plot's going to take you, and you just try to write. It sounds like that in Kim's case, this caused some anxiety and ultimately left her burnt out. And even though one of the times she participated, she won, she even says that she wasn't a fan of the experience as a result. And so it's about finding that system that works for us. Are we going to be a pure pantser and try and let creativity take control? Or do we want to try and take a little bit of control for ourselves and get a feel for what this story might be about in our heads in advance, or by doing some outlining prior to and then taking to it from there? And again, yeah, like you say, she uses part of her lunch to plot or to write. And this is a big thing in NaNoWriMo, and I think it can translate into other months as well, where lunch might not seem like a long time, and I know that you want to also eat during your lunch, and sometimes it's nice to just relax. But if even for 5 minutes of that, you're like finger pecking down a sentence or two, or just getting an idea that you had in your head when you should have been working on your spreadsheets for your day job, maybe you just need to get that on the page, that can count for something, and it does add up in the end.
Absolutely. I go through really intense work periods in my life where if I can sit down for 15 minutes a day and free write before I start my day, I count that as a huge win. Because it's words that I didn't have before. And not just that, for me, a lot of it is about coming back into that space, that practice of getting into that creative mind space or touching base with the story that you've worked on, that you're working on. Because even if you don't get down very many, like you get 3 words in 5 minutes or whatever, you've still spent that time thinking about your story and or trying to think about it. And I think that that practice is worth a lot, frankly.
I would agree completely. And we have some additional feedback on this same prompt from Avery again, who's kind of on the other side of the coin here. We had Kim, who had a tough experience because she was just pantsing her way through it, and that left her a little anxious. Avery mentions that in 2018, she decided to do a full, detailed outline, and it was a brutal experience for her. She realized after the fact that she is a plantser, like Cinna, at heart, and she needed to give herself plenty of wiggle room to play. And she also added that the really big challenge for her was Thanksgiving and knowing that she would miss a few days of writing. So we can see that this is very much a your experience may vary, and it comes down to finding what's going to work best for us.
Yeah, so the thing I just want to add to that is in watching the conversation unfold on Twitter and hearing about different people's experiences and whether they were pantsers or plotters or plantsers, one of the things that really struck me was, like, maybe you try it one way one year and you realize that doesn't work for you, just like Avery's talking about now. And then the next year you try it a different way and maybe that works a little bit better in some ways, but still not great. And then you just try something different the third year, you know what I'm saying? And so it's really about just experimenting and finding what works for you and not making it this be this, like, if you don't like it this time or if you don't succeed this time, then that's it. You can always try something different next year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it is easy to kind of get really mired in what's in front of us and maybe get discouraged if our process isn't going well. But as with all things in writing, I think it is important, like you say, we want to be thinking a little bit about the long game. Maybe we're just learning this first year what's going to, I don't know, maybe we're getting a feel for what might work for us, maybe what's not working. And next year for NaNoWriMo, or even in Camp NaNoWriMo, which they do a couple times during the year, then we can come back in a few months or in a year later and try out a new strategy. I think that's really, yeah. I'm really glad you mentioned that. But of course, regardless of strategy, whether we are a pantser, a plotter, a planter, sometimes we're going to fall behind, whether it's from something like Thanksgiving or just general busyness in our life. And so we did ask folks, what happens if you fall behind? What is your strategy or how do you keep yourself from falling behind? And we have some feedback again here from M.A. Hinkle. I don't know if you want to take this one, Sion?
Yeah. So M.A. says that she aims for 2,000 words a day. So that's her daily word count goal. But she ends up not always making that. She usually ends up writing in large chunks for a few days. Even so, even knowing that about herself, she likes that goal of 2,000 words a day because it's enough, she says, to really get into the groove without it feeling like a burden.
And again, that's a couple hundred words over the average we would need to make on a daily basis to reach 50,000. And so if we shoot for 2,000 and we come up short, but our coming up short is still 1,700 words, we're still ahead of the NaNo pace. And then if we have a goal of 2,000 and we write 2,200 on a given day, well, then that's all gravy because we're ahead of the NaNo pace and ahead of our own goal. So good thought there from MA.
And I think, too, that part of what's key about what she said is that for her, the 2,000 words a day doesn't feel like a burden. I think it's really important to set goals for ourselves, whether it's NaNo or just your writing life in general, to set goals that feel attainable, even if you don't always make them all the time. If you set a goal of like 10,000 words a day and you're already like freaking out about that, then that's, I mean, it's kind of damning yourself because you're just going to freeze up. Yeah.
And we don't want to, like you say, we don't want to create a burden. We don't want to make a miserable experience for ourselves here, which is why I was glad that Cinna mentioned keeping in mind this philosophy that it'll all even out. And Cinna says he just kind of goes with the flow. So even if he has a goal for a given day or a week or whatever he decides on for the month, just trusting yourself to know that, yeah, there are going to be days where you probably don't meet that goal. It's not the end of the world. It'll even out in the end because in a day or two or in a week or two, you'll have a really great day. You'll really be feeling it. And it'll all come back to kind of help you get back on pace in the end.
Kind of along those lines, Avery Ames said that She tends to build up a bank of extra words in the first week rush of excitement, meaning she exceeds her goals in that first week, but eventually it starts to taper off, is the impression I got from her tweets on this topic, and she falls behind. And one of the things that she's found helpful, she did a 12-hour marathon. And so what this brings up for me is finding social ways. I don't know actually whether she did the marathon with other writers or not. I think doing a in-person or a virtual marathon is a pretty common thing to do in groups. You can often find groups on Twitter who will do that, or if you can't do a marathon, there are groups on Twitter that'll run writing sprints every day, and that can be really helpful for people too.
Yeah, and those are something that I will actually coordinate once in a while during NaNoWriMo, and sometimes outside of NaNoWriMo as well. I will call them, you can follow the hashtag RRPowerHour on Twitter, which is a mouthful to say, but I kind of like how it looks when you type it out. I haven't done those in a while, but I will probably try to pick those up as I get back into drafting fresh words and when I'm not mired in revisions. So keep an eye on that hashtag. Maybe we can join up for a sprint once NaNoWriMo actually gets underway.
Nice.
And we also had some feedback here from Cass. I don't know if you had thoughts on Cass's that you wanted to share. Otherwise, I can jump right in with hers here.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Perfect. So we had some feedback from Cass on what happens if we fall behind. Cass mentions, inevitably, she will fall behind. She needs a day's break sometimes, and it's good to just take it. But most importantly, if we do fall behind, we can't let the gnawing guilt get to us. Remind yourself it's okay to take a day off. Cass says, you will make up the words. So very much in the vein of what Cinna had to say, it's all going to equal out in the end. You kind of have to go with the flow. The more that we gravitate toward the guilt of not meeting our goals, whether it's in camp or whether it's, I keep wanting to say Camp NaNoWriMo. I've obviously done that one more than NaNoWriMo, but whether that's during NaNoWriMo or any of our other writing goals, don't focus on where you came up short. If you do feel like you need to do some evaluation of why, that's fair, but focus on what you can use from that going forward and what it is your plan is going to be to start making those goals going forward. And it's okay to take a day off. Like she says, you got to take care of yourself as well. It isn't just about this book for an entire month. You've got a regular life to live too.
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, our airwaves, yes, it's true. Anything is possible when you advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than a dollar a month, yes. We offer packages for as little as less than a dollar a month. So get your book, your editing services, podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, our airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise.
Yeah, and self-care is, for me, is just a really important part of doing life. I struggle to find that balance between like letting myself feel what I'm feeling, because that's really important, but also like not dwelling on it or feeding it. You know what I mean? I think that's a little bit what Cass is talking about, is like maybe you will feel guilty, but find a way to not feed that sense of guilt, and cut yourself a little break and just be kind to yourself. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's something that I really wish I personally had listened to other folks when I heard that advice earlier on. And I kept saying, no, 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 I'll be happy when I get the work done. But when the work is upsetting you, it's important to take that step back.
So what do you do to keep up the momentum then? Like, how do you, like you had mentioned in the chat, possibility of rewarding yourself, but how do you pull yourself out of those mini funks that are inevitable?
I think my experience in getting into a funk came most strongly during the 2018 NaNoWriMo for that first draft of Event Horizon. And I think it was because I went in with these very lofty expectations, and I started to trip myself up when I realized I wasn't going to meet my loftier aspirations beyond 50,000 words. So what I did is, rather than focusing on that, I took a look at how far I was coming every day. You know, what momentum had I already built for myself? What chunk of this story have I told that I didn't think I would get to, or that took on a new life and I can just bask in that, aside from the quantitative aspect of all of this? So for me, it comes back to anchoring oneself in the actual bliss of doing the writing itself, and knowing that the time we are going to be spending doing this work is really where the joy comes from. So using that as a way to maintain momentum, and also, like what Cinna said earlier, I fell behind on what my word count goal was, but I just kind of let go of that and didn't. I stopped looking at the spreadsheet as intensely every day. I logged my numbers, but I was surprised to find that 2 weeks after having been pretty far behind, I was actually almost right back on pace, and I did end up finishing the month ahead of my original goal. So kind of releasing yourself from the quantitative side of it, I think, can be a good way to keep up the momentum for what's really this is all about, again, which is the story.
Well, and I also heard you, what I really liked about what you said is that you're talking about, okay, so maybe you're falling behind on the word count, but appreciating what you have accomplished and focusing on the successes instead of dwelling on the failures. I think that's a really good strategy for doing life, frankly. Especially with people like you and me who set ourselves like some pretty ambitious goals.
Yes, goals are good until they trip us up rather than set us up for success. So yeah, it's important to focus on the successes when we have them, regardless of the dimension or shape that they take.
Yeah.
And I know one other thing that folks do, M.A. Hinkle mentions this at SkySongMA on Twitter during the RightsCast chat. She mentioned she'll work on different projects to stay fresh and rely on community to get her through. So she says, yeah, I basically always win NaNoWriMo, but she's a rebel and she works on more than one project. And, you know, some folks might take umbrage with that and say, well, that's not really the point. But folks, for me, and I think for those who are interested in maintaining a healthy mindset, the goal is just to be part of the writing and to get that writing done. So if you want to bounce from one project to the next and you end up doing 25K for one manuscript and 25K for another, that's 50,000 words. In my view, congratulations, you've done great work over the course of 30 days.
Yeah. Both, I found it really interesting that both Cass and Kim mentioned that they're motivated by their spreadsheets and their data. Cass says that she loves watching her chart grow over the month as the word count adds up. And Kim says she lives in spreadsheets all day and has a tendency to use the progress tracker and get competitive with it. I think we may have had that quote earlier too in the.
Yeah, we either had the same quote or she mentioned it again a little bit differently, but you're totally right. For both Cass and for Kim, they're using that spreadsheet. They're using the climbing bar graph of their progress every day as a visual representation of their success, because maybe sometimes, like I say earlier, I try to divorce myself from the quantitative success and bask in the story. But sometimes basking in the story that we've written might be hard if we know there's going to be a lot of revision to do. And so maybe divorcing ourselves from that even and looking at a graphic representation or something visual that we can just look at and in a quick peek go, wow, I have come a long way. This bar graph shows me I am making progress. I'm not going to focus on all the revisions I have to do. I'm not going to focus on the hard numbers, but I can visually see, all right, things are moving in the right direction. And so, yeah, for Cass or for Kim, it seems like they have that as a motivator.
It's interesting because the way that you're talking about it, it sounds like a ever-shifting landscape, like the sand dunes that buried the 12th century Norman church that I visited when I was in Cornwall.
You can't see this, people, but Sione is holding up her pinky and drinking tea as she says that.
No, I only drink tea like twice. But anyway, yeah, no, it just sounds like an ever-shifting landscape, meaning, you know, sometimes you need to focus on the story, sometimes you need to focus on the quantitative data. And so it sounds to me, and this kind of gets us into our takeaways and summary section of the conversation, but it sounds to me like maintaining flexibility is a really key part of the NaNoWriMo process for you. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that's 100% correct. And that's flexibility in terms of how we view our success. It's flexibility in where it is and when it is that we try to squeak in a few additional words. And ultimately that it's not about the 50,000 word goal, it's about the story we find along the way, you know, a takeoff on that. It's about the friends that we make along our journey kind of thing. So that is for me a really good anchor point, because you can always kind of tether yourself back to that. But then being flexible in your analysis of your success, which analysis doesn't sound like a very fun word, but that is ultimately how I kind of view it. And that helps.
It sounds like maybe having some, because this conversation is about prepping, right? And so what I'm getting out of it is that maybe one thing people can do to prepare is come up with like several different measures for success. And so when one of them is causing them a lot of distress, they can start thinking about a different one and finding ways to build flexibility into their plan.
Right. And beyond that, you also mentioned some takeaways here in your episode notes. You know, community is another great way to find that support. I know you had some other thoughts here for good takeaways.
Yeah. I guess when I listening to you and in seeing the responses in the Twitter chat from everybody, I think community is a key part, it looks like, for not just during, but also after the NaNoWriMo is over, because I think a lot of people get stuck. We'll get into this later, maybe, but a lot of people get stuck with then what do you do with the with the novel that you've written or partially written? But community, writing sprints, support groups, scheduling writing time sounds like a really good strategy. Coming up with daily or weekly word count goals, especially if those word count goals are maybe just a tiny bit higher than they need to be, is a good way to build in flexibility. And experimenting, we mentioned this earlier, until people find the right mix of plotting and pantsing, something that works for them and allows them to feel successful during NaNo. There were a couple, because you asked about rewards during the chat, and there were a couple sort of new to me rewards. The spreadsheets thing is not something that I had gotten have ever really been into voluntarily. But also Avery, I think it was Avery, mentioned she was part of a group where if like you write a certain number of words and you get a duck. I assume she mean like a rubber duck.
I believe it was a rubber duck, yes.
Yeah, and hers was like a goth themed rubber duck, which sounds freaking adorable. And she said, you know, I know it's kind of silly, but it helped keep her motivated. And like, yeah, if I'm going to win awesome, you know, goth themed rubber duck, if I write 15,000 words or whatever, that would seem cool.
I think what I really liked about the rubber duck thing was that it also was tied to a sense of community. It sounded like there were folks in her area who would go to the library to write. And if you were working on your NaNoWriMo manuscript, you would put your most recently acquired rubber duck or, you know, just any of your rubber ducks out on the table next to you. And it was kind of like a nice tip of the cap to the other folks who might be walking by to do the same thing and say, oh, hey, I see you. You see me. We're here for the same thing. And it builds that sense of community and helps maintain that momentum.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing that people could think about to play with is, are there in-person groups that they could participate in? Or do they work better with sort of virtual groups? And so finding, yeah, just different ways to think about community.
Right. And that kind of ties into that might, of course, be a question folks have is how can I find that community? And through the NaNoWriMo website, of course, you can look for folks. Twitter is a good way. If you want that physical interaction, Google will go a long way in helping you find a local writing group, as will Facebook groups. Are there others you can think of?
Like Meetup? I don't know. I haven't looked on Meetup for there, but it might. And also, I was just thinking, like, because you said library, and I'm like, well, you could, if your library has a community board, you could get a sign up and say, hey, if you're interested in this, email me, and you could have some in-person writing buddies at the library.
Yeah, it's a good way to meet other writerly folks who could then ultimately go on to become possible beta readers or critique partners, and you start building a nice cycle for yourself and for those other writers, and a good little community for yourself as well. So aside from that is a question folks might have, I know that there were also some questions about what happens after NaNoWriMo. And actually, oddly enough, after our chat last night, I was scrolling through Reddit and I saw this Today I Learned about Buzz Aldrin, who was, of course, among the first people on the moon. Buzz Aldrin apparently suffered from alcoholism and depression after his trip to the moon, which he quote, the quote here from him is, I wanted to resume my duties, but there were no duties to resume. There was no goal, no sense of calling, no project worth pouring myself into. Now, of course, when we're writing 50,000 words in a month, that isn't the same as getting ourselves to the moon in 1969, but the same principles apply, right? It could be really easy to finish out the month and be like, wow, I had this big thing I was working toward for a whole month. Whether we make that goal or not, we've got words that we didn't have before. Now what? How do we keep up that momentum and how can we, you know, push ourselves forward? And I know that in Buzz Aldrin's case, because I did a little more research on this, he started spending time doing things that were a little outside what he had been working on previously. He spent some time teaching. He tried to get into that for a while. And then, you know, there's only so many chances to go to the moon. And fortunately for us, we can take a little break from our manuscript maybe and come back to it, to the lunar landscape of our pages, whenever we so please. But it's okay to give ourselves that space. So that was just something that I thought was a little serendipitous that this quip about Buzz Aldrin showed up on Reddit for me.
So, yeah. So what I get from that is maybe as part of your NaNoWriMo prep, think about how you want to handle the after. And is there something else that you want to plan to do to give yourself a little break before you come back into editing? Or do you want to plan to meet beta readers and critique buddies? So, yeah.
And one of the other questions that we had here that was a little more specific about what comes after NaNoWriMo is from Cinna. And Cinna asked if we had any tips for a NaNo rewrite plan.
It
is a very good question, because once we've given ourselves space from our manuscript, if we need it, if we've found our purpose in another way, if we've taken the Buzz Aldrin approach and kind of given ourselves some distance before we come back, well, we need a plan to do these rewrites. And depending on whether or not we are a pantser, a plotter, or a planter, we might be in a very different position when it comes time to do these rewrites. If we are a pantser, for example, and I am not a pantser, but if I were, I have to imagine that you might be looking at a manuscript that is maybe more challenging in terms of trying to figure out what you were thinking in terms of plot, in terms of character development, in terms of spending any amount of time in a particular scene, because it was very exploratory. So what I would do before going back into my manuscript, whether I'm a pantser or even a plotter, is asking myself, well, what was my concept here? And this goes back all the way to episode one of this show. And by concept, I mean, can we boil what we want this story to be down to this idea of, in a world where X, we have a character who must do a thing before a deadline or face some kind of consequence or consequences for that action. And if we can figure out, okay, we have this mess of 50,000-ish words. What are those five elements really? What are those five elements for what I have on the page? Or if I have a couple of different characters I was focusing on, or a few different overall goals, maybe what's the one that I want to give the most emphasis to? Because I think it can carry the story best. That can be something that's worth putting in our heads, that's writing down, that's putting next to wherever it is that we write so that we can focus ourselves on that as we go. And if we ever feel like we're just lost because we can't make sense of the words that we were putting down on the page, we can always tie ourselves back to that and say, this is what I think this story really needed to be about. How can I help shape it in that way?
Also, the Rev Pit editors did a course on with Readsy on what do you do after you have a finished draft. And so if you go to Readsy and you search for the Rev Pit course on that, that can give you some really good concrete ideas for how to tackle a rewrite plan. But also in Senna's question, there's a slightly different way that it could be interpreted, which is, if you plan to rewrite a novel during Nano, how do you tackle that? And I know that's something that you're doing this time. And so what is your plan? Like, how does that look? Because that's going to look different than writing a new book, right?
Yeah. So for a Nano rewrite plan that isn't rewriting something we wrote during Nano, or maybe it is, but we're just rewriting any old manuscript during Nano, my plan is to generally go into it, kind of again tying it back to that concept idea, is I'm going to be essentially revising or rewriting chunks of this. Which chunks do I need to rewrite or revise such that I can bring myself back to what this book really needs to be about at its core? It also would depend, of course, too, on whether or not at this point I've gotten feedback from beta readers or from critique partners, what have you. Maybe prior to NaNoWriMo, if I'm sitting on all that feedback and I haven't picked out the most, what everyone was kind of converging on in terms of their feedback, maybe that's a good thing to do prior to NaNoWriMo, is figure out, what was the underlying feedback that all of these folks had in common? And then how might I actually start to address that in my rewrites? So if you're going to use NaNoWriMo for rewrites, maybe try and get some feedback in advance on the manuscript you plan on working on. Ask people what they think the story is really about or what they're getting out of it. Even if you know it might be a bit of a mess, just pick the reader's brain a little bit and see where they think it might go. And if that falls in line with the vision you want to bring to the page during your rewrites, then you have the answer to your question. And that's kind of what you want to focus on for the month of November.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that using the prep period during this month of October to go through either your own impressions and or the feedback from other people and figuring out what your concrete action items and goals are. Because as you mentioned, you don't need 50,000 words in order to complete your rewrite during Nano. So that doesn't make sense as a goal. And I'm imagining that you have other goals that you're setting. Is that right?
Yeah. And those goals are less quantitative and ultimately about the story. It's kind of, what is my new vision for it? Or how has my vision for this story changed based on feedback and the distance I've given myself from it? And it's kind of all about that qualitative goal setting then, what is my emphasis going to be for this particular character's perspective chapters? What is it that I want to do for theme over the course of the month? And it gets a little bit more into the storytelling weeds. It's less quantitative, like I say, but those are valid goals and they're going to be important to the ultimate way your manuscript reads for readers.
Yeah. We had one last question from Kim, who, that's the leche go, but that's not what it was.
Leche go my ego. Yes.
Lechego. Yeah. And she said, what are your top tips for avoiding burnout during and after Nano? And I'm really curious about your perspective on this, because I have a hard time avoiding burnout in life. So I will just soak up whatever wisdom you want to throw our way.
So this for me comes back to a couple of things that we touched on a little earlier, actually. So I hope that over the course of this conversation, maybe some of the themes, the recurring topics we come back to help answer this for Kim. But for me, to avoid burnout during and after Nano, it's all about trying to keep things in perspective and basking again in success and trying to recognize that success takes many different forms. We mentioned sometimes it's just that visual of the graph. Sometimes it's getting really in the spreadsheet and seeing the numbers. Sometimes it's just appreciating that we have a story down that we didn't have down before. And reminding oneself, too, that though there is a 50,000-word goal for the month, it's okay to let go of that. It's okay to let go of the daily goal sometimes and give yourself space to breathe and take a day off, take an afternoon off, whatever it is you think is going to be appropriate for you. Because, sure, you could get to 50,000 words if you really want to force yourself to the page and you feel like, well, I'm going to get to 50,000 come hell or high water. But if at the end of that, you're left feeling anxious and burnt out and you hate what you worked on, you're going to have a tough time coming back to that manuscript because you're going to have associated it with these difficult feelings. And that's the last thing we want, because there could be plenty of really great stuff in there. It's just going to be harder to get back into because you'll have these complicated feelings toward it. So I would say, keeping in mind that success takes many different shapes and that it really is more than okay, it's critically important that we make time for ourselves outside of who we are as writers as well, whether that be during November or any month of the year.
I kind of, I'm just thinking about, like, I mean, it was just sort of more philosophical, but, like, I was thinking, where does burnout come from? I think burnout is when I'm trying to do more than what I have resources for in the moment. And it actually, as counterintuitive as it is possible to do more than you have resources for in the moment. And it's possible even to sustain that for a while. But I always feel like I'm borrowing from future energy is how that's been my experience of it. And so I think the key is to set realistic goals. And like, if you're going to take on something, if you're already at max capacity before Nano and you want to do it, then I would think about, like, is there anything you can not do during November that you're normally doing in order to make space and creative, like, free up some energy for it? And I know that that's not realistic for everybody, but that's kind of one thing you might think about is there anything that can fall off your plate for a month so that you can do this instead?
Yeah, that's really important. I hadn't thought of that. So yeah, for folks who can do that, that seems like a really good option. So I think that about covers it here. We've answered some participant questions, and we've covered a great deal on NaNoWriMo prep. If anyone has any other questions after this episode, send them to therightscast@gmail.com email account, or you can always holler at us on Twitter @rightscast. Of course, though, aside from that engagement, there are opportunities for engagement on our next episode of this show, because you listeners are now back in the driver's seat and helping us pick our next novel approaches and RightsCast chat topic. After this episode debuts on October 11th, I will put up a poll on the RightsCast Twitter account. It'll be up for a week, and you can vote on what you want to talk about next for RightsCast chat and what you want the two of us to talk about during the Novel Approaches episode. The topics that will be available to you, we've got a full brand new slate of topics. We've cleared off all of the old topics for the time being, and we're going to roll with a fresh set of three here. And those topics are non-linear storytelling, crafting villains, and opening lines. So again, you'll be able to vote between nonlinear storytelling, crafting villains, and opening lines. There will be a fourth option, and that is other. Please comment if you'd like to vote for that and write something in the comments that you'd like to see us talk about, whether it's for this episode or you want to get it in the rotation. We, of course, would love to have that feedback. So keep your eyes peeled for an announcement about the RightsCast chat that we will have about that episode a few weeks after the poll has closed. So that's what I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Novel Approaches here on the RightsCast Network.
For more writerly podcast content like this, visit rightscast.net or follow us on Twitter @RightsCast. I'm also on Twitter @WriteLearnDream, and I'd love to connect with you.
And I am over on Twitter as @IamRRCampbell. I also want to thank our patrons at patreon.com/rightscast. Aside from getting entered in that monthly drawing for a critique of their first five pages, patrons also get some really neat RightsCast Network swag. They get discounts on my editing services, additional votes in the RightsCast Awards, and they get to listen to every episode, whether it's of Novel Approaches, Biblio Breakdown, or the R.R. Campbell RightsCast. They get them all early, and they get them all without ads. So you can contribute at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Everything counts, and we're really close to unlocking a fourth podcast every month. So if you want to help us do that, you can head to patreon.com/rightscast and become a patron today.
We'd especially like to thank Laura Hazen, whose contributions at the Wise Mentor level earns her shoutouts in every RightsCast Network episode, on top of all the other great patron awards she receives.
So again, that's patreon.com/rightscast if you'd like to learn more or become a patron yourself. Next up on the RightsCast Network, we've got an episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast featuring developmental editor Lori Puma on how to keep a reader's attention. So that's kind of an important one. Be sure to listen in when that episode debuts on October 18th on rightscast.net and wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's it for this episode of Novel Approaches. Thank you so much for listening.
Until next time, you know what to do. Write on and write well.
This is the RightsCast Network at RightsCast.net.